It's Tuesday, March 7th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight we talk about how not to suck at games in general.
Let's do this!
I apologize if this episode may be short or slow, but we're a little tired from the weekend.
Yeah, this episode also might suck because I'm also tired.
Yeah, I mean, we talked yesterday. I think we did a decent show yesterday, but one, I had quite a bit of wine in me, and two, the weekend had not hit me with full effect yet. Mm-hmm. I'm down off of my geek high, and now I'm just tired.
Yep, but it's kind of funny that we're going to make an episode of How Not to Suck that might suck itself.
Yeah, especially since yesterday's episode was How Not to Suck at Podcasting.
Yeah, see, we said we were going to do a theme week last week, but then yesterday we decided, oh, let's do a How Not to Suck. Well, we decided, let's do both. It's a How Not to Suck week.
Yeah, now, for anyone who's curious, the only reason we didn't do a main normal theme week was that we had Nuri, our guest, around, and whenever we have someone around who we could have on the show, we try to have a show that they would actually have something to say on.
Yeah, it's kind of
boring. We made that mistake early on where we'd have someone over, so hey, be on the show, and then we'd talk about something they didn't care about or didn't know about, and it didn't work.
Yeah, hey, artist person, artist podcaster, yeah, let's talk about
food.
Video games.
Yeah, video games.
Awesome.
And food.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Linux kernel.
Awesome. Maybe next week.
Yeah. So, Scott, I hear you were playing a game as a result of the fact that you were so tired.
Yeah. See, and the fact is, I'm so tired, I had to play a game where I didn't have to exert any effort whatsoever. In fact, I could play this game in my sleep. And you may have heard of it. It's called Progress Quest.
It's a lot like World of Warcraft, only they really kind of streamline the process of playing the game.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much, you have all your stats, you roll stats, you pick a class and a race, you start out at level 1, you have spells and equipment, and there's a plot, and you fight monsters, and you collect items, and that's it. It's just like every other RPG of leveling MMO
type
game.
Yeah, it just takes out all the most tedious part, you know, the horrible leveling. You don't have to deal with that. You can just
play the game. Has the leveling, it just doesn't have the clicking.
Yeah, so
it'll
just do it.
You just you run Progress Quest, and it starts to level you up. It's pretty awesome. You should check it out.
Yeah.
I mean, it even lets you play online, you know? There's, like, a server that keeps track of everyone's level, and you might kill someone else if you're lucky, I think.
Yeah, a lot of people have little avatar SIG things they put in their SIG profiles in various, like, PHP type BBs where it'll show how high a level you are.
Oh, really?
In semi-real time.
I didn't know about that. Maybe I should get that.
I've seen people do it. I don't know all the details of it, but I've seen people who had Progress Quest updater things in their SIGs.
Ooh, my encumbrance filled up, and now I'm selling all my equipment for. I'm selling all my items for gold, and now I'm going to turn them into a new equipment. Let's see what comes out.
Yeah. So, anyway, it's video game day. And, Scott, tell us about the pedophiles in the news.
So, pedophiles.
Yeah, because this doesn't come up, you know, every other week when we're talking about the internets.
Pedophiles. So, there's one guy, you know, pedophiles seem to always come up with a crazy way to get little boys and girls. You know, like, a guy will start an ice cream truck, or maybe, like, a bookmobile, you know.
Well, I guess the thing we'll preface is that you always hear a lot of hysteria about, oh, the pedophiles are out there, and this has been around pretty much as long as there have been pedophiles, and people worry about it a lot, and I think some people might worry about it too much, or the media perhaps likes to sensationalize it in order to, you know, get listeners or readers. But this case here is an actual, like, wow, that was really a pedophile doing a scam on the internet to get kids.
Yep.
And they got him.
I mean, it does happen, you know, it's just that pedophiles are really kind of, they're kind of clever, a lot of them.
Yeah,
you know?
This is kind of scary.
So, this guy, he started a Counter-Strike, like, clan, I guess.
Yeah, like a guild for you non-FPS types.
Yeah, so, it was apparently a very good guild, too. Like, way pretty good. Like,
yeah,
if
you play Counter-Strike, you might have played against them. They're called the Green Berets.
Yeah, I'm kind of tired, so I'm going to explain this pretty shittily.
Oh, good game.
So, he went around and he recruited 10 to 13-year-old boys. Apparently, that's what he liked. In fact, this guy was actually a former convicted pedophile in Canada and was not allowed to make contact with minors.
Oh,
it was against his parole or probation or whatever he had.
All right, strike one. Well, I guess strike two, since strike one was being a pedophile.
Yeah, so he went around the internet recruiting 10 to 13-year-old boys, and he had them lie about their
age
so that he didn't get in trouble. And he had them join the guild or clan or whatever it's called. And then what he would do is he would say, hey, if you send me pictures of you naked, I'll promote you or make you like a manager in the clan or stuff.
Yeah, now his like second in command, and he'd kick people out who like didn't comply with these requests. Now, like the second in command or someone else in the clan.
A normal guy, like a 19, 20-something year old guy, like a normal dude.
Yeah, now he got a complaint from a kid like, all right, the head of this clan just wanted me to send him naked pictures of myself. You guys are freaking weird. Oh my God. And he chalked it up as, wow, crazy punk kids will say anything if you kick them out of a clan, whatever.
Yeah, when you, I mean, seriously, you see what punk kids say in forums these days. They're like, oh, you noob, homo, blah,
oh my
blah,
God,
blah, blah.
Today,
yeah,
gazors.
Someone says that, you don't actually think, oh, that guy's actually.
All right, so what do you do when, you know, 10 kids all say the exact same thing, that your leader guy is a pedophile who propositioned him?
You call the police.
Yep, and it turned out, sure enough, he was.
And they got him.
And they got him.
So, you know, if you're looking to protect yourself from pedophiles, I don't know how old everyone here is listening, but if you're a pedophile target, or if you have pedophile targets,
I think more importantly, if you're a parent who has to worry about this sort of thing.
Yeah. Don't worry about, you know, normal stuff like chat rooms and stuff. That's, you know, whatever. Worry about, like, you know, clever places you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, that's real useful advice.
Because the pedophiles are clever.
Worry about the thing you won't expect, as opposed to the thing you already expect.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, so you know what? All right, parents apparently, if we're going to go by Scott's theory of avoiding pedophiles, have to worry about a pedophile getting a hot air balloon and sailing over the neighborhood with a giant crane game grappling hook, picking up children.
Dude, that would be the most dangerous pedophile ever. In fact, we should make a comic book about that.
Actually, I point out that he's not that dangerous at all because the problem is solved with one airsoft bullet.
You really think they would make it all the way up to the hot air balloon?
Fine. Gone. I don't know. I'm tired.
Yeah, me too.
It's a hot air balloon. You pop it.
Yep, just like you pop the pedophiles in the face. When
yeah,
you...
yeah, anyway.
Wow.
And now there's a siren going on outside. Yeah, we're real tired. We'll see how long this episode actually goes.
All right.
Yeah, but at least our saving grace is that the reason we're tired is that we had a weekend of geek, or a geekend, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, if this podcast was 3 days a week, every episode would be awesome, but we're so manly, we're going to still keep doing 4 days a week anyway, so you have to expect this kind of thing and deal with it.
Yeah, well, partly because way back we asked the question to our listeners, and I guess now that we have a lot more listeners than we did way back, we'll ask again, if we're too tired to do a show, do you want us to do it anyway? Or do you want us to just, like, skip it, or what?
Yep. I mean, you'll still get something. We'll do it. It just won't. It'll be like this. This is, like, the minimum quality.
Yeah, because if it's beyond this, we'd actually skip it. We'd like,
yeah,
all
it's
right.
Where we revert to talking about how sucky it is. That's the suckiest it gets.
Yeah, because beyond that, we just don't record one.
So go to our forums at frontrowcrew.com and answer our question again.
Yeah, but anyway, I actually have a news here, too. It's not about video games, but it's about the internet. Now, there are blogs. Blogs have been around for a long time. There are shills. Shills have been around for a long time.
Oh, we know them shills.
Yeah, Penny Arcade broke a lot of interesting news about shills not too long ago on the internet.
Forum shills.
Apparently, Walmart has been effectively just hiring bloggers to spread propaganda about Walmart on their blogs. Like, openly. Walmart sends out emails, and these bloggers post them verbatim as though they said them themselves.
So why are these bloggers doing this? What kind of people are
they? I don't know.
They?
Actually, these bloggers are not only defending Walmart against all this legislation and against all this, you know, quote, bad propaganda against them, but they're also really indignant to the fact that people have pointed out that they're just posting emails they get from this Walmart PR person.
See, here's the thing, though, maybe these aren't actual bloggers, but just, like, people Walmart, like actual employees, or maybe they're a marketing company Walmart hired that just creates blogs. I mean, anyone can make a blog. You don't know. Just because there's a blog there doesn't mean there's a person who I would call a blogger on the other end.
Now, 5 years ago, I would have laughed at you and called you crazy. No one would put that much effort into marketing. But as the last year or so has shown us, there are people who will quite literally create entire fake online communities and entire fake identities with the sole purpose of tricking you into thinking they're a real person so that they can then recommend a product to you.
Well, it all comes down to the fact that nowadays we have ad blocking, commercial blocking, pop-up filtering, you know. No one wants to look at ads. So the new thing in marketing is to not make ads because people don't like to look at them. You know, it's like Google took it one step by just making, okay, these are ads, they're text, and they're tasteful. They take it a step further where they say, it doesn't even look like an ad. It looks like content. It is content. It just is also an ad.
Now, the thing is, to me at least, shills are very easy to spot. I mean, I actually see them fairly regularly on Slashdot, and it's very obvious that, wow, that guy was totally paid by a company to say that. No human being would type that.
Yep, I know. It's very easy. It's like, hey, that guy is recommending a very specific product, and if I go and I look for that product, you know, I see something similar, or it's not hard.
But I don't know what these marketers are thinking. They're not being clever. I mean, I could see if they were being clever about it, but like Walmart here, it's the same text going to all the different blogs. So whatever the blogger says, like, this is my opinion, whatever. Yeah, you happen to have the exact same opinion verbatim as 80 other people out there. Outstanding.
Good job. I mean, if someone was going to pay me to promote them on my blog, first of all, I wouldn't do it unless I actually agreed with whatever I was going to say. So if Walmart came around, I'd say, okay, Walmart sucks. But if Nintendo came around, I'd be like, all right, I'll say something good. You know, you give me money. Like, I'd say I was being paid. You got to say you're being paid.
Yeah, well, say Microsoft gave us Xbox 360s because they wanted us to, you know, talk good about them. We'd take the Xbox 360s, but we'd be fairly brutally honest about them.
Yep, we'd be completely honest in whatever we said, and we'd be very open about the fact that Microsoft gave us the Xbox 360s with intent for us to review them.
So awesome.
So pretty much, if a blogger is, or anyone on the internet is promoting something, you know, a product, a service, a store, a company, you know, make sure that they're not just BSing you, especially if you're in the process of making a purchasing decision.
Yeah, the easiest way to pick them out is to, usually the person posts under some sort of name, try to find other posts by the same person. You'll often find that, wow, that guy has nothing better to do than to go to every forum on the internet and post the same message.
Of course, it's funny because, like, I'll hang out in a forum and I'll just, like, you know, they're the things I like, and I'll try to promote them to people. So it's like, you look at myself, and you might think I'm a shill sometimes, you know? It's like, I'll be like, read Sanctuary. Read Sanctuary. Yeah, you think I work for Viz.
See, I can't really define it, but, I get this vibe. You read something, and you'll just think, all right, that's obviously a shill. And I'm usually pretty accurate, at least as far as I can tell. I mean, I very rarely can track the person down to the point of knowing with certainty.
Yeah, but see, it's like we go back to those people in the forums that Penny Arcade was talking about. The whole point of that is those people, you know, mastered the art of not setting off the shill alarm by looking like legitimate people.
So I guess that just be very leery of any advice you get on the internet that doesn't come from us.
Yeah, and, you know, this stuff even we were talking about before, even on TV, it might not look like a commercial, but if they're showing curling, it's a commercial for curling.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, so things of the day, so we can get this Travis Diva podcast on the road. All right, so over the weekend, one thing that we did is our usual hobby of sit around and watch videos on Google. You know, type the word explosion and see what kinds of explosions you can find.
YouTube also works.
Yep. Well, we found this video. It was filmed around 2002, and it's these two guys. I forget their names, even though I just looked it up. But basically, they are pretty much perfection when it comes to Super Mario Brothers 1.
I can do just as good as they did.
1 is just as well.
Yeah, I know.
Captain Grammar.
Captain Sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of Captain Grammar, how not to suck? It's supposed to be how to not suck.
Yeah, I point out that I put how to not suck in everything we do about this whole thing.
But you say how not to suck.
Well, you do.
You also do.
Nah.
Yeah. I'm sure we have a recording of it, in fact.
I think that I've said it the correct way more times than I've said it the incorrect way.
That doesn't mean shit.
Yeah, it does.
Anyway.
So these guys, they set up two TVs, and they had original NESs, like no emulators or anything. And they raced each other to see who could beat Mario 1 first.
I could beat him.
Now, aside from the fact that, no, you can't.
Yeah, I could.
Aside from the fact that they beat the game crazily fast without ever dying or anything, they beat the game within seconds of each other.
Wasn't it within milliseconds? It looked to me like they hit the flag at the same time.
Yeah, one guy's record, his all-time record, is like 5 minutes and 11 seconds. And the other guy's like 5 minutes and 9 seconds.
Ooh.
Like the race was neck and neck the whole time. And one would pull away a little bit because one of them wouldn't attempt something difficult. But then the other one would jump ahead. And watch this video. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Mario 1 speedruns, but those are always, like, programmed with some emulator or something.
And this was two guys doing it live.
There's two guys doing it with their hands, right? And they don't do anything particularly impressive, you know, because they play just...
I'll note that the jump, and this is even mentioned in the Google video, like, side notes from the website, but in World 8-2, one guy jumps straight through all these bad guys, and the other guy sits there and ducks for, like, 3 seconds until the coast is clear.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, you know, it's a pretty good move, but it's not like one of the crazy things, like in the Mario 2 speedrun where he jumps over without using the magic carpet and stuff. Anyway, so I don't know who here is super old school like me, but before there were Game Boys and before everyone had Game Boys and such, there were other games that you could, video games you could play in your car on long trips.
Yeah, back in the Stone Age, and these things are terrible. I don't know why Scott seems so enamored with them.
Hey, hey, the Game & Watch was like the original real deal, right? But then a company called Tiger LCD, or Tiger Electronics, whatever, they made these little LCD games that would all take two AA batteries, most of them anyway, and it was like this fun little LCD video game, and there's a website here that has pictures of most of them. I say most because at first I thought they didn't have any missing. But in fact, there is one that I had that is not on this site.
Ah.
So.
Which one?
OutRun. Well, actually, OutRun is on this site. But the OutRun they show is actually like this whole big piece of plastic that's the front of a car with a steering, a real steering wheel on it. Like, look at this thing. You know, it's kind of crazy.
Ah.
The OutRun that I had was just like all the other ones. That was just a little white thing with buttons on the left and buttons on the right. And, you know. But anyway, some of the best ones actually were the Disney ones. Like the Disney ones were like bigger and they had more plastic and they cost a little more. But like the Aladdin one was like this terrific game. Like you could call on the carpet. You could call on the genie 3 times to come help you. And you would throw your swords at Jafar and stuff. And you'd, like, jump and duck and get around the magic carpet and stuff. It was
a good
game.
I'm sorry. I found these games just utterly, I don't know, I guess contemptible is the word. I just couldn't stand them. They weren't really good games.
Well, they leave a lot to the imagination because, you know, all you really have is, you know, it's like there's a screen and there are only so many built-in LCD sprites on the screen. And some of them are out of your control and some of them are under your control. And you're basically trying to control your LCD sprites that, you know, you can...
Imagine playing a game that goes 1 frame per second and there are only, like, 3 possible frames for your character ever.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, that sounds just awesome.
You can also control, like, weapons and things. It depends on the game. Like, some of the games are more complicated than others. Like, the Street Fighter game, you know, you could go forward, back, up, down, punch, kick, punch left, punch right, use your special move. It was, you know... It was better than any Street Fighter for the NES, because, you know, there wasn't one. Except for Street Fighter 2010.
I mean, I hate to, you know, rain all over your thing of the day, but I'd rather play with, I don't know, nothing than a Tiger game back when I was a kid.
Well, see, the thing was, Tiger games weren't something you really did, like, in your house. You did, like, on a trip when there was no Game Boys. As soon as Game Boys came around, these things were done. But,
actually, I point out that when the Game Boy came out, some people got Game Boys, but there were a lot of people, at least in my school, who kept playing the Tiger games and insisted they were better.
All right, those people are messed up. There's no way, none of these Tiger games even come close to Tetris. It's not even like, okay, maybe Home Alone 2 is probably the best one, because the way that worked is like you would go up and down escalators and there was a map and it would show you where you were on the map and you could run all around the mall setting traps, and it would show you where the bad guys were on the map, and you would try to trap them, and once you trapped them enough times, it was actually pretty good and complex.
Yeah, I think the NES one was the same kind of way.
Yeah, the NES one was also really good. I should go find that ROM. But other than that one, I think none of these hold up to anything the Game Boy had at all.
Yeah, I guess before the Game Boy came out, as a little kid, I'd either read or sleep in the car, and Tiger games were just kind of, I remember laughing at my friends who had them.
No, we'd always, whenever we went on a long trip, like, our mom would buy some Tiger games, and that would keep us quiet for most of the trip.
So in keeping with our first fairly weak-themed week, how to not suck at games and gaming.
Oh, we said it grammatically correct.
Correctly.
It's a funny.
Yeah, you may notice that we will probably be saying ha-ha fairly often for the next, I don't know, month.
All right, so anyway.
I'm sorry about that.
The first rule.
A new inside joke has really gotten to us lately.
Yeah. The first rule about being good at games, try to win.
Now, this might seem obvious. I mean, you might think, all right, if I'm playing a game with people, my goal is to win. Have a good time and win. If you're not playing to win, you might as well not even play the game.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many times people are like, you know, you play a game to win, and some other people don't play to win. They just play because to, like, manipulate the pieces. I don't know what they're doing there, but when you're not, if not everyone in the game is trying to win, it really ruins the game for the people who are. I mean,
like, a good example of it, way back, we were freshmen at RIT, and our friend Greg, we were playing a four-way game of Settlers, and it was me and Scott, and our friend Greg, and this girl we knew named, Yoan, I think?
I have no idea.
Whatever, it was
one,
some girl we knew. It might have been a five-way game or a six-way game, I forget. All I remember is that we were playing Settlers, and Greg was in last place. He just happened to be, because he's pretty good at the game. He was in last place. And instead of just striving to do his best or whatever, he just kind of started giving all his stuff to the girl, and then she won because of that, and the game just kind of ended.
Yeah, imagine if you're playing baseball, right? And, you know, you're not major leagues, there's no prize or anything, so no one really cares, you know, and your team really wants to win, and you're trying your best. And the other team just doesn't care. They, like, the pitcher lobs the ball to you, and no one even bothers to field. I mean, if no one's bothering to field the ball, you're not really gonna, you're not, like, in this heated race to run around to get home. You're just like, oh, they're not even trying. Now it's not even fun to run the bases because no one's trying to get me.
Now, of course, it really all depends on what, I guess to use a game theory term, utility you want from the game. I mean, if you're playing with three people and all of you just want to screw around or just want to have fun and you don't care who wins,
just
great.
Fiddle around with the pieces. Don't even bother with the rules.
Or even just play the game, but do whatever you want. The thing is, the problem only comes up when multiple people in a game want a different utility from the game. So if I'm playing to win and you're playing for no, like you're just playing to fiddle around with the pieces, then it's not going to be fun for either of us.
My suggestion, though, is that if you're the type of person who doesn't want to play games to win, then you should probably play different kinds of games, like Apples to Apples or Nanofictionary.
Or Wench, which we played this weekend. Yeah. It was actually really fun.
You know, or Mafia. Or games where winning really isn't the point, where the point is the game is crazy.
Yeah.
As opposed to games like Puerto Rico or Tigris and Euphrates, where the point is winning.
Because we've actually had good success with that. I mean, Scott and I and like the rest of most of our crew are fairly hardcore German gamers. Like, we'll sit down and play a multiple-hour game where we move cubes around and yell at each other. And we really play to win, like, seriously. But some of our friends just really aren't into that. And at least we can still play games with them because we play a lot of these more open-ended games, like, as Scott said, Apples to Apples and etc.
Now, the second rule of not sucking at games is don't cooperate. Don't cooperate with the guy who's winning and don't, you know, I guess you can screw anyone, but you want to try to screw the person who's ahead of you.
Yeah, like say you're playing a game with five people, and you're currently winning. Now, say the person in last place is they're losing by a lot. And instead of trying to win themselves or trying to, you know, not be in last place, say they just start taking every action to prevent you from winning. So you would have won, and the only reason you lose is because the person who was in last place had nothing better to do, so they just screwed you out of the victory. That's not really cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, a spoiler. Like, it's like, imagine if you're in a car race, and you're winning the car race. You're winning it so much, you're passing the guy who's in last place. And then, since he can't win, he crashes into you. That's what it's like. Don't do that.
Yeah. Now, honestly, it's not a problem for us, because basically, if I'm not going to win a game, like, actually, it happened to me in, we played Citadels over the weekend, and I would have had a decent chance of winning, but after a few rounds into the game, Evan to my left decided to be the king every round, and he decided to assassinate the king every round. That may sound weird, but it actually makes sense if you play the game. Basically, he set up the game so that I could not in any conceivable way win, and there was no way I could win at this point, but the game still had a long way to go. Now, regardless of how well that strategy worked for him, I didn't just turn around and start trying to screw whoever I could in the game. I did everything I could to not end up in last place. So my utility became strive to win, but more importantly, strive to not be in last place.
Yep.
That way I'm still participating in the game, I'm still having fun, but I'm not just spoiling the game for other people.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, he's not... You don't want to modify the outcome of the game to not match the play that occurred. You know, because sometimes it's a broken game that lets these things happen. You know, like, the simple fact that someone who's not doing well can ruin the game, and there's no way that they can win at some point before the end, that's like, you know, it shouldn't be. In a perfectly designed game, there should be no point during the game before the end of the game where you can have absolutely no chance of winning, no matter what your score is. Or else it's, I don't know.
That can happen if you make poor decisions.
Oh, yeah.
Even in a good game.
But the point is, you don't want a game... If a game keeps making the game... God, I need some grammar.
All right.
Okay. If there is a game in which people who play poorly frequently end up in a situation where they cannot win well before the game is actually over, that game probably isn't the best game in the world.
Yeah, Risk is a big purveyor of this. Settlers kind of gets to that point when you play with good players, but that becomes more random.
Monopoly, I guess, kind
of. Oh, Monopoly, definitely.
Yeah.
Axis and Allies.
Mm-hmm.
Shogun, that game we talked about. Someone will win long before someone wins.
Yeah. Even in, like, chess, it's like, I have a million pieces and you have two, but now it'll take, like, 20 turns for me to actually get checkmate, you know?
Yeah, well, that doesn't happen if you're two good people are playing chess. That happens when we play chess.
Yeah, but you see the point. Like, all in checkers, one guy's a bunch of kings, and then you're running around trying to get the other guy.
Yeah, but again, that's a two-player game. I think that's a whole different
thing. Yeah, two-player game is a whole different thing. I'm just trying to think of examples, but...
I think we had enough examples.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, once again, we're tired.
Don't fall asleep during games.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, ready? Here's the third way to not suck at games. Pay attention and take your turn.
Yeah, now this is a pet peeve of ours. Your mileage may vary, but honestly, we don't like it if people take more than about 20 seconds to take their turn in most games.
I mean, most board games don't have simultaneous play. You know, when one person's taking their turn, everyone else is sitting around waiting for them to take their turn. And, you know, if you spend, like, 5 minutes taking your turn, everyone else is spending 5 minutes doing absolutely nothing. It's, you know, it makes the game unfun for everyone else.
So you have to kind of, you know, move along a little.
Yeah, and you might say, oh, that contradicts rule number one, try to win. Well, guess what? If you can't think fast enough, you probably don't deserve to win. You know, it's about thinking correctly, but also thinking quickly. Any idiot can figure it out if they spend 10 minutes.
See, well, I guess that's another hallmark of a game that maybe isn't the most well-designed game.
Yeah.
Like the game Acquire. It's a fun game, a little stock market kind of deal. But if you sit and calculate the odds of everything every round, you're guaranteed to win. And if everyone calculates it every round, the game becomes just a machine, and you might as well not even play it. So we had a friend who would actually sit there and think every round, you know, 5 minutes, and come up with the exact perfect move. And no one else wanted to bother with that monumental kind of wasted effort. I mean, if everyone did that, then it wouldn't matter anymore, and the field would be level. The only way to really fix that was to say, all right, you can only take 30 seconds on your turn. Now the game goes to whoever can think all of that the most quickly.
Mm-hmm. Another thing is, when it's someone else's turn, because people's turns do take time, you know? At the most, someone's turn takes a minute, depending on the game. You know, maybe it's a game where they have to manipulate a lot of pieces, and that takes a while during their turn, you know? Think about what you're going to do on your turn during the other person's turn. Also, some games might allow you to prepare physical stuff for your turn. Like, I know in Illuminati, you can prepare your income before it gets to your turn.
Yep.
Do that, because it makes the game go faster. And when the game goes faster, it makes it more fun for everyone. And it actually helps you win, because, well, you're thinking about what you're going to do constantly. Even in some games where, you know, you can't really think about what you're going to do before it's your turn. Because,
like Alhambra. Oh, my.
Yeah. Or like Ticket to Ride, kind of. Where the situation changes so much between your turn and your next turn that thinking about it along the way, you know, just doesn't help you, because the situation will be different before your turn comes around. Just think about whatever you can, because there usually is something you can think about. You know, and then your turn will take less time and everyone will be happier.
Now, also, if you're a bunch of friends decide they're going to play a game and you decide to play with them, you've got to commit to playing the game to the end. Because otherwise, nothing is more disappointing than if three people are really into a game or sitting around playing it, and then the fourth player halfway through just doesn't want to play anymore.
Oh, that's the worst.
Because you can't keep going. If they don't take their turn or they just leave, you can't continue. That basically just, the game's over and no one wins.
Yeah. If you play a game, you better pay attention to that game. Don't, like, go looking at something else all the time. I'm guilty of this sometimes. Like, there'll be a distracting, movie in the room, and then it'll grab me. You know, or the worst is when something happens in the middle of a game, and everyone in the game gets up to go do something else. The game sits there. Then everyone comes back, and there's this game sitting there.
And no one remembers what was going on.
No one remembers what was going on. No one remembers whose turn it was.
It's fine if everyone gets distracted, because then no one cared in the first place. It's only a problem when...
Well, yeah, but then it's kind of disappointing for everyone when they come back and the game is lost, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on the game and what you're doing. Like, if you were just playing a game to kill time until the pizza arrived, and then
you ate
as soon as the pizza came, and then you forgot what was going on in the game, whatever. But basically, just don't be the one guy who ruins the game for everyone else by quitting halfway through.
Oh, yeah. Do not cheat.
All right, yeah. You wouldn't think we had to say this, and... Because honestly, none of us, other than Scott, none of us have ever cheated at a board game.
I didn't cheat. not quite. I mean, it wasn't against the rules in the book.
All right, I submit that it was at least morally dubious.
I agree it was dubious, which is why...
It's like a CEO, you know, giving himself a pay raise and then firing a bunch of people. It's not technically illegal, but you're such an ass if you do it.
Well, what happened is this is game... Where you have citadels. You have cards and you pass them around, and there's one of each card. So you take one and you give the rest to the other player, and then they pick one and they give the rest to the other player.
And you have a vested interest in knowing what everyone picked.
Yes, you do. If you know what everyone picked, you can really kick some ass. So what I did is I always thought that someone else might do it, and I was looking out for it defensively because I thought it was such an obvious move. But I wasn't going to do it because I was too honest. Where what you would do is you would just take the card you want, put the cards in order, hand them to the next person, they would select it, and you would see which one they selected by memorizing the order in which the cards were.
So Scott does this, and he hands them to Pete, and Pete, like, fans the cards out, very obviously thinks, selects one of them, puts it down, and then passes the cards
out. I can't believe that none of you actually said anything before I admitted it, because Pete fanned the cards out, I was staring right at him. He drew. I stared at him.
Captain Grammar strikes again.
It's grammar day here on Geek Nights. I stared right at Pete, right at his hand. I saw exactly what he picked. He handed the cards to Rim. I announced loudly, very loudly, what card Pete had selected. Then Rim selected a card, and I very loudly proclaimed what card Rim had selected. Then at the end of the turn, I told them that I did it, and they were like, "Goddamn, you cheater."
See, that's the difference. To Scott's credit, I mean, he cheated, but it was more like a, hey guys, heads up, when he was open about it, we didn't care.
It was mostly a defense against anyone doing it in the future, because I was worried about people already doing it, specifically Rim.
Yeah, Scott accuses me of cheating, even though I've never cheated in any game other than the cheating version of Illuminati, where you're supposed to cheat, and Euchre, because honestly, for any of you who play Euchre, the card game, half of that game is how you cheat with your partner.
I accuse anyone of cheating and does better than
me. Yeah, Scott accused me of cheating at Advance Wars.
Doing better than me is equivalent to cheating.
Yeah. But, I mean, apparently, there are people out there who cheat. Like, consider this. We've played games with our friends for years and years and years. And cheating, like, no one even considered the idea that any of us would ever cheat. Like, actually cheat at a game. It was never even an idea. Like, we never even conceived of it. And then, recently, we were playing games with these Moz guys, this gaming group in the area. And we all sit down, and one of the guys' victory point chips were kind of near the victory point chip pool. And one of the other guys was like, hey, we should move that pool so there's no confusion as to how many points anyone has. And we look at each other like, what? Why bother? What's he going to do, cheat? But apparently, other gaming groups have problems with this occasionally. Or they worry about it.
Yeah, if you're the kind of person who, like, if you're going to play a game, right, it's like, how can I explain this? There are emotions within the game and without the game. If you're the kind of person who lets emotions within the game carry outside of the game, you probably shouldn't play games at all. Not with anyone else, because what happens is, let's say we're playing, what's a game where you screw the other player a lot?
All right, Tigris and Euphrates with the catastrophes.
Yeah, Tigris and Euphrates and catastrophes. You can directly screw up other players by putting catastrophes right in good places to screw them. So, if you do this during a game to me, I'll be like, fuck you! Fuck you! But after the game's over, I won't be like, I hate you for doing that still. Grr.
Yeah.
And be serious about it. I mean, what the hell's your problem if you're like that?
Yeah.
It's just a game, man.
Or by the same token, if in a game, like, say Scott, I don't know, dinged my car in the morning, so I'm mad at him, and then at night we're playing a board game, and I do everything I can to make sure he doesn't win just because I'm mad at him, what the hell?
Yeah, that's not cool, because, you know, Rim's not doing everything he can to win the game for himself, which is rule number one. He's doing everything to make sure I lose. You know, that makes the game fun for not him and not me.
Yep, that was kind of a non sequitur, since we're still talking about cheating, though.
Well, no, because cheating is something that the person...
Yeah, I see your point now that I realize
person who,
outside of the game.
A person who takes their emotions, you know, from outside and inside the game across the border is the kind of person who would cheat, because if you're going to be mad about losing after the game's over, you know, then you're probably going to be more likely to cheat, because that'll make you feel good after the game's over. You know, if you actually take the game too seriously and care about the winning and losing on another level, that's going to be a cheater, which is not good.
Yep.
It's kind of like, imagine if you're playing football, like American football, and a guy tackles you and breaks your arm. It happens, man. If you're the kind of person who, after the football game and after you're out of the hospital, will go and beat that guy up and break his arm, you got a problem.
Yeah. Actually, something like that happened. We were at a quiz bowl tournament in high school, and we were just playing tackle football outside with a bunch of other kids from other schools. And one guy, like, knocked a tooth out during a tackle by accident.
All right.
And he was hurt, but the guy who knocked it out and the guy who had it knocked out, they both walked over and, like, called a doctor and took care of it. And they were good. They were walking like, ha, you totally knocked my tooth out. Yeah, that sucked.
Yeah, see, that's how it's supposed to be. You know, unless, of course, if the guy obviously meant it, like he tried to knock the guy's tooth out.
Yeah, like, say you have a scrum and then one guy just kicks another guy who doesn't even have the ball in the sack.
Yeah.
that's a different story altogether.
Yeah, it's obvious. Like, in ice hockey, if a guy hits you, he hits you. But if you start a hockey fight, that's a hockey fight.
Well, that's also part of the game. It's more like...
Well, there are different kinds. There are some hockey fights for one reason.
If someone takes his skate off and tries to stab you with it... Yeah, you can tell we're tired because I didn't put an away message up on AIM, so I just got messaged.
Good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the idea.
But basically, I mean, my point on cheating is simply that if you have to worry about your friends cheating at a board game, what kind of friends are those?
Those are the kind of friends who probably take the game too seriously. You know, I mean, you take the game, you can't take the game not seriously enough, because if you don't care about the game at all, you're not putting any effort into winning. But at the same time, if you take it too seriously and you care about it too much, then winning and losing becomes like this life or death thing, when really all it is some number and some pieces moving around on a piece of cardboard.
Yeah. I mean, I guess for me, I take games very seriously, but I take them seriously within the context of the game.
Yep.
So it is life or death during the game. And yep, as soon as the game's over, it's, ha-ha, you beat me.
Or, ha-ha, I win, you all suck. And that's it. That's the last you hear of it.
Yeah.
Until the next time the game is played, in which case, didn't I kick your asses last time?
Yeah, but you know what? That falls into the realm of trash talk, which is not only acceptable, but expected.
Encouraged is the correct word.
At least with
for.
Our, I mean, you know, once again, your mileage may vary, but trash talk is a very critical part of the front row crew culture here.
Yeah,
if someone loses a board game badly enough, they'll hear about it for the next, I don't know, the rest of their life.
Yeah. I mean, if you can't take and dish out trash talk, I think, you know, you probably shouldn't do it then. But at the same time, if you can't take it, you're probably missing out on a lot of the enjoyment that can be had from dishing and taking trash talk when all are capable of doing so.
All right, now the last one is very important if you play German-type board games. And this one is going to sound very self-deprecating, because we have a problem with a certain game. So read the rules and play the game right.
Yeah. A lot of people like to modify rules of games.
Which is all right, but make sure you understand what you're doing.
Yeah, a house rule is okay now and then, you know, especially if it's an intelligent house rule. Some games, in fact, need house rules to be playable.
But, like, say you're playing Monopoly and you add the free parking rule where, you know, all the money goes in the middle and whoever lands on free parking gets it. That's not a good house rule. That just ruins the game and makes it a random crap fest.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to think about whether you're making the game more fun or whether you're making the game silly. The way game rules are written are by people who spent a lot of time designing and perfecting the rules of that game. And if you play it the way that is indicated, you'll probably get the most fun, especially if you're, you know, taking it seriously and trying to win.
Now, we say probably because, like, there's a game, Entdecker, and most people seem to agree that a variant that some people kind of came up with is better than the actual game.
Yeah, I mean, there's an old Entdecker and a new Entdecker, and it's pretty complicated, but...
Yeah,
you know, in most cases, you want to play the game as written in the rules, and, you know, when you mess up the rules, you just put an asterisk next to the score at the end.
Yeah, like in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
And everyone goes, ambiguity, ambiguity, and then, you know, you finish the game out following the rules as best you can. That's
yeah,
just
but
how
the
you
main thing
do
is,
it.
Don't feel bad if you screw up the rules, because, I mean, we're the hardest core German gamers out there. Like, we scare some of the scary war gamers when we play with them, but... the first times we played Puerto Rico, we played three-player, but we didn't take the prospectors out. So the game was just completely broken, and we didn't realize it right away.
Yeah, and we played Amun-Re, a game we like a lot and have played many times.
Yeah, like, it's one of our favorite games.
We played it incorrectly every single time, except maybe we got it right the first few times.
No, I don't think we did.
I think we had, like, rules right the first few times, and
then
we forgot
them. Yeah, but
you know
what? I don't think we had all of them right, because
I can't remember a specific instance in which we had every rule correct, and we played the game.
Basically, we loved this game, and then one day someone noticed that we were doing a rule wrong.
And then we noticed we're doing another rule wrong.
And then we looked through the rules, like, with a fine-tooth comb, and we figured out, like, everything, and we found, like, another thing we were doing wrong. We're like, we've got the game set... Whew. Now we're playing the game perfectly.
And then I found a website where you can play Amun-Re online.
And what did Scott discover? We were still playing it wrong.
I was playing the game, and there was something that didn't quite match up with what I remembered from playing the board game. So I went, and I tried to call home, but Rim lost his cell phone, which he just got back today.
Yep, I had to mail the cool guy who found my cell phone some money.
So when I got home, I posed a question to everyone sitting there, three of which were Amun-Re players, and... They all gave the answer that I would have given that morning.
Yeah,
and
I said, bullshit, we've got this game down.
And I said, read the rule book. And what was the first word out of he who readeth the rule book's mouth?
I believe the word was, fuck me.
That would be correct. So, read the rules carefully and
a lesson
follow
we
them.
Have learned well.
A lesson learned, damage done.
Yes. All right, so we're about done today. I'm sorry we were tired. Pyro has his dead Pyro days. Penny Arcade never makes a mistake, but for whatever.
Penny Arcade only is 3 days a week. If we did 3 days a week, we could do it too.
Yeah.
We're just as good as they are. In fact, better. One more.
One more.
One Ooh. More.
Yes, he's better.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Tomorrow, I can guarantee that we'll be much more awake because I'm going to go to sleep about 10 minutes after I stop talking into this microphone.
Awesome.
And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for our opening theme.
Be sure to visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com. If you like our podcasts, you'll love our forums. Make sure you visit them. You can send your email feedback to geeknights@gmail.com. And if you want, you can leave us a voicemail at 206-333-1537.
Geek Nights airs every weeknight, Monday through Thursday.
Geek Nights is recorded with absolutely no studio and no audience. But unlike those other talk shows, it's actually recorded at night.